We are in Chodesh Halvavos, Shana Bitochen, Perek Shlishi, Perek Gimel, third Perek. In the middle of the third Perek, Vahak Doma Hashenis, he said it's page 376.
Yeah.
376 in the Feldheim, in English. Vahak Doma Hashenis. The Chodesh Halvavos here. The second preface, yes? The Chodesh Halvavos here is laying down the prerequisites for Bitochen. He told us there are four prerequisites. The first one we've been spending a lot of time on, and that is consciousness, being aware of the seven premises for Bitochen. I'm trying to find different words, premises and prerequisites. There are seven points that you have to remember. And that's really prerequisite number one for Bitochen. What were those 7 points? Let's recap again, but in about this time, in about a minute, instead of we've been recapping for a long time already. Number one. Not necessarily in order now. Hashem holds your entire life in his hands, and everything that he's doing is mapping out the full plan for your entire life, your entire future. But he holds your life in his hands exclusively. Number two, he loves you intensely. Number three, is constantly focused on you. Number four, he can achieve anything he wants. Whatever he wants for you, he will be able to do. Number five, no one else can get anything in edgewise. Number six, he knows what's best for you better than you do. And number seven is the realization that he does good for you unconditionally. You don't have to earn. Now this, we're going to discuss a little more this last clause, but those are the 7 points to remember. And that is prerequisite number one for Bitochen. If you don't have those 7 points clear, it's really hard to just let go and trust Hashem. You do have those 7 points clear. And like we keep saying, these are 7 points that we all know anyways, just that focusing on them and seeing them together really does make it easier to come to that feeling of, okay, things are okay. I am in secure hands. I'm in a secure state. So that's number one. You want to remember those 7 things. If you can put them up, like we said, if you can put them up as a bulleted list, short 7-liner on your fridge, it's a good idea. What's number two? Hakdama Hashem's. Point number two is...
But we skipped a whole bunch after those 7 things in here. That's why, see, after the 7 things, there's a whole thing about a person who does not understand about illusions and...
The elaboration that we kind of touched on it and moved through last week, that is really an elaboration of, well, on this list, the 7. The point that understanding that Hashem is not just dealing with the here and now, but that he's dealing with the full picture. And therefore, things that are happening now might be the beginning of a manipulation for a long-term process that's really going to play out. It's going to unfold and reach its culmination in 15 years or in 500 years. So that was an elaboration on that point.
Okay. So then we're on 378 for the second.
378. Oh, Yashar Koyach. Page 378 in the Feldheim. And it's kedai to just reiterate that understanding that when we say that Hashem is controlling the full span of your life, it's the understanding that he's constantly manipulating things now for things that are supposed to happen later, things that might seem insignificant now, can actually be very, very important pieces, a tiny little step in leading up to something very significant in your life in 23 years from now. And that's also the way to relate to things, Chalila, that seem like not so great. That whatever, any good or not so great that we see is very much limited to the here and now. We don't have the ability of encompassing more than that. While Hashem is busy planning things like we discussed. We gave some examples about how today you see how some little something that happened a long time ago actually was very significant, even though you didn't realize it at the time. So those are, you have to have those 7 points clear. That is requirement number one for true bitachon. Number two, the second prerequisite. Sheyeda v'yisbara etzlo. A person has to internalize and really realize ki abayra yisbarach, that Hashem mashkif alav, is watching you, ve'inela mimeno negleo v'nistoroi. And everything's on the table. You are completely transparent when Hashem is watching you. He sees what you're doing, but he also sees exactly what you're thinking, where your mind is, what you're feeling. He sees what you're saying, what you're doing, and he sees also exactly what's going on the inside. And he's looking to see, Hashem wants to see, are you really trusting me? Are you really trusting me? So this is an important part of bitachon. Like we stressed back at the beginning, bitachon is not a coping mechanism. I keep on saying that and then correcting it. It is a coping mechanism. It's a very chashuva aid to coping. But that's not first and foremost what it is. Right? We stress that people make that mistake. I think bitachon is kind of like a crutch that you can use. It's a privilege, etc. Bitachon first and foremost is an expectation. That's what it is first and foremost. Hashem has a relationship with you. He wants you to really be living that relation in a tangible way. And that means that he wants you to trust him. Right? We've discussed a number of times that it's like that in relationships, certainly in a parent-child relationship, right? If the child is constantly second-guessing, did you remember this? Did you remember that? Right? The parent will get irritated. You know, kid, I've been taking care of you before. I remembered your meals before you were able to talk. So don't worry about, trust me. So this is what Hashem wants from us also. He says, I'm taking care of you. I'm taking care of so many different things you can't even keep track of. You can't begin to keep track of. You have no choice but to trust me. Think of all your bodily functions, right? My rabbis, Bechir Jacobson, said that he one time was approached by a medical student who was really learning many of the different physical functions. And he was taking it very, very, very seriously, very much to heart. And he just started really living with a certain trepidation of what if this goes wrong, what if that goes wrong, all kinds of anxieties, all kinds of things going wrong. So, and you know, we've moved through most of our lives with many of those very scary things not happening. Here and there they happen. But the idea is Hashem is saying, if you had to worry about all those things, you'd be going nuts, right? So I take very good care of you and I want you to trust me. I'm on top of the case, like we said before. I'm on top of the case. I am never distracted. And I know what I'm doing. And I have your good in mind. I'm doing it because of my love for you. But, I expect you to trust me. So, that's number two. To understand that Hashem is watching to see, are we trusting him or not? Are we relying on him or not? Next. We skip to the next one. V'hakdama ashlishis. Prerequisite number three is sheyachid eleikov bevitchoneibo. You have to make Hashem your exclusive address of trust. V'mashuchayev liftoyachboy. Those things that you're supposed to be relying on Hashem, you have to rely only on Hashem. Don't join anybody else in. You say, I have a good team in place. I have Hashem and I have Uncle Tom. Or, and I have Hashem and I have Dr. So-and-so. Now, this we'll have to explain momentarily. This ruins your bitachon in Hashem. When you are joining someone else in, you want to round out the picture. Hashem might not come through in every situation. You want to have something backing it up, right? Or sometimes the other way around. You know, I know that I can rely on Uncle Tom. And I have Hashem in the background just in case. So Hashem is watching to see that, and he is displeased. He doesn't consider it true loyal bitachon if you're relying on someone along with him just to round it out, just to cover the holes. And you know what it says about Asa? Asa was one of the pious kings of Yehuda. He's a very great king. When he relied on doctors, the pasuk says he had a problem with his legs. It says, when he was ill, he did not seek out Hashem. Instead, he sought out the doctors. And therefore, he was punished. So let's understand something. Does this mean that you should not be going to doctors? This is the challenge of bitach. This is the challenge of bitach. To go to doctors, but not to be putting your emotional weight on them. You're going to doctors because this is what Hashem expects you to do. Now again, like we keep saying, this is easier said than done. And as we keep saying, let's utilize the opportunity of saying it easily so that when it comes down to it, that's exactly what we're doing here. The essence of this shir is easier said than done. We're taking advantage. Now it's easy to talk, let's talk. And then we hope that thereby we'll equip ourselves with the kelim we'll need in the various situations of life when we're actually faced with it. But let's talk now with the realization that it's easier to talk. But what are we saying? What are we saying? What we're saying is that, yeah, you are supposed to go to the doctor. But be careful. You have to keep yourself in your mind. You have to keep yourself detached to a certain extent, realizing that why am I doing this? Keep reminding yourself, why am I doing this? Because Hashem wants me to do it. Hashem expects me to go to the doctor. Hashem expects me to take responsible steps. You can formulate it in a few different ways. Hashem wants me to provide a cover story for his intervention. Hashem wants to give it. He wants me to give a natural cover for his involvement with me. He doesn't want to operate in an openly supernatural way. He's going to be intimately involved, but he expects me to cover up his involvement with a cover of nature. Hashem expects me to take responsible steps, but that's what I'm doing. I'm doing it because Hashem expects me to do this. And I'm not saying, oh, Lemaisa, the doctor, is going to be the source of my healing. I go to the doctor, and in my mind, I remain fully reliant on Hashem. That's where my healing will come from. Question.
So, you know, we also have big Talmidei Chachamim who are connected to the medical field, people like Rav Fier or Rav Fisher. And many of us turn to them when we have a question. Who's the best doctor to go to? So is that also, like, in theory, we could say, look, I'm going to go to a doctor because I need that kli for Hashem to bring his bracha. But it doesn't really matter which doctor I go to. Hashem just needs, you know, not needs, but Hashem wants. But, you know, we really do work very hard to come up with the best doctor.
Oh, okay. So here's the question. Good question. So here's the question. The question is, we're saying that you're supposed to view the doctor just as a keep focused on the fact that the doctor really is just a kli, right? He's just the conduit of Hashem who's going to provide the healing. So where is there room for inquiries, consulting with, you know, researching, consulting with experts on who's the best doctor? So let's come back to the point that we said that Hashem expects you to make a reasonable responsible hishtavus. What does reasonable and responsible mean? So this really depends on the situation. Nobody is going, when somebody needs a throat culture, nobody is running to Rabbi Fuhrer, right? Because this is a situation where everybody understands that it's a very reasonable. What if the doctor misses exactly the spot where he's supposed to hit with the swab? I want to make sure that I go to a doctor who I know for a fact always does it right. Nobody thinks in those terms because you understand that the stakes are such, and it's the type of thing that anybody could do. A person who will be trying to research who is the doctor with the best track record of throat cultures will certainly say that this is a person whose bitachon is completely placed on his own abilities, and it's not just a bitachon problem. You should probably be seeing a different kind of doctor. But but when it comes to things that Bederech HaTeva we understand that it really makes a significant difference what kind of doctor you have. It really does make a difference if you have a person with a lot of experience, a person who's been doing this often, a person who's where the difference between a world expert and a guy who's also in the field can be the difference between a 35% success rate and an 85% success rate, then part of the responsible ishtablis is going to research that. And in these types of situations, when it is staking, and that is part of the reasonable ishtablis, we do that. But even that we want to be doing not with a sense of, here's where it gets fine. I'll tell you two implications of the difference between a Baal Bitachon and a non-Baal Bitachon when it comes to such a situation where a person is faced with a situation that it's a rare doctor who really knows how to treat it, and you want to make sure that you're going to be in the best of hands. So there's two things. First of all, even in terms of the research itself, you go about it with a mindset of, I want to do reasonable, responsible research, not to start second guessing in a million ways, but did I really turn over every stone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you went about something that is a very solid, you went to a very knowledgeable expert and you got a very clear opinion from him. Okay, now you're going with that. So not with a sense of panic, am I really going to get to the right guy? No, even this is about going through the motions that Hashem expects of me to handle this responsibly. But then there's going to be another implication. Let's say you got to one of those medical referral experts, and he tells you, well, the best one in the world is somebody in Holland. The second best is a guy in Boston. Okay, you try to get to the guy in Holland. There's no way. Can't get to him. There's no way he's going to have a place for you on time. And therefore, you end up with the person in Boston. So here, there will again be a difference between the Baal Bitachon and the person who's not a Baal Bitachon. I did mine. Hashem is not availing the guy in Holland to me. And therefore, I feel very comfortable in the fact that I did mine by going to the person in Boston. I don't feel any regret or nervousness over the fact that I couldn't get to the top guy, because once again, it's about me doing what I need to be doing. So I managed to go about it with an understanding of, I have to put in the efforts to do that solid, responsible effort, but there's a limit to the emotional weight I'm putting on that effort. Right? Because I understand that is not what's going to make it or break it. It's me punching my card. And then, but the emotional weight stays on Hashem. And therefore, the Chazon Ish describes this. He says that with such a person, they'll both be doing the same research. Well, one might be doing it with more of a desperate edge to it. But the person with the Baal Bitachon will be doing the same research, will making the same consultations, but his emotional weight will be on the Tehillim, on the spiritual efforts that he's making, on the Kabbalists that he's making, even though he'll also be involved in the consultations, etc. But that's not where he's putting his emotional energies. Question, another question.
Yeah, so this one, I read in Mishpacha that Rav Yisrael Belsky was taken into Maimonides with heart issues and they wanted to operate. And the family and other people were pushing to move him to Mount Sinai, where there were better doctors. And he said, no, I'm refusing to move. It would be a busha to the doctors here. I'm going to have the operation here in Maimonides. And if Hashem wants me to be better, I'll be better. And sure enough, it was successful.
It was.
Right, yeah. But like,
how does this fit into the picture?
Yeah.
Okay, so here a question is being raised that really brings out the complexity of this whole discussion. Story that you're saying is a story of Yisrael Belsky, you said?
Yeah.
One of the great poskim in America was Nifter a few years ago, who was taken to the hospital. I don't remember the two hospitals that you said. Maimonides versus?
Mount Sinai.
And the family wanted to move him to Mount Sinai because there they were better experts. And he was concerned about slighting, hurting the feelings or embarrassing the doctors here at Maimonides, and therefore he refused to be moved. And he said, this is, if Hashem wants me to be okay, I'll be okay here. So you know what? This is a classic example of weighing the factors and determining what does my requirement of ishtadlus, how far does it go? You can have a situation, and then this is a beautiful example of where it gets fine. Because I would imagine that if we were talking about a hospital with complete, very, very fresh students off the cuff, nobody experienced, versus a place where my mom is talking about top people, he probably would not have made that cheshbon. He was probably making the cheshbon. I'm guessing. I just heard the story now, so I can't really tell you what was going on there. But it makes a lot of sense in terms of if we think of it in these terms. There are various considerations that come into the equation when we're talking about what's the reasonable ishtadlus. Some are ishtadlus just for the purpose at hand. What is better for the goal that I'm trying to achieve? But let's say you're talking about a case where here, let's say you have a 70% success rate. And in the other hospital, you have a 76% success rate. I don't know where you'll draw the line. Maybe it'll be 67 versus 80. I don't know. But whatever the case is, right, we're talking about a certain margin. And here he said, does my chiyuv ishtadlus require me to get those extra 10 degrees? Well, maybe if all other factors were equal. But not all other factors are equal. There's another factor here, and that is the embarrassment factor. The embarrassment factor, that combines with the fact that there aren't really enough degrees here to make it such a critical difference. And therefore, he used the same shikul hadas that he used for his psukim, right? The same, it's a good example because he's talking about a man who had shoulders, right? This was a man who was able to make psukim in very serious areas of halacha. And here he made a heavy-duty psuk for himself, right? That, the combination of factors, does not warrant moving. It's a beautiful example because it shows how it's not always just a question of exactly the degrees in terms of the medical part of it, but that there are also other considerations. I can think conceivably of another case where the person says, well, if I stay here in town, I'll actually be able to continue my regular starim and shiurim, whereas if I go to another town, if I go somewhere else, I won't. Now, here again, if it's a 20% success rate versus a 90% success rate, you can't make that cheshbon, at least not an ordinary person. You might have, one of these, a person who's living in a different plane, but we're talking about us. If it's 20% versus 90%, you can't make that cheshbon. You're not going to be, but if we're talking about, like we said before, 75% versus 85%, a person might, I'm saying all this for illustration purposes, okay, please don't write down the percents, okay? But here a person might say, here the equation does make sense for me to say I'm going to stay here. And you know what? Also in the other direction. Let's say, Chalila, it's a situation where here it's a 5% success rate, and in the other place it's a 15% success rate. It goes in that direction also. A person says, you know what? In both places, b'derech hateva, it's minimal. And therefore, I need a certain element of nes in any case. I prefer to stay here where I'm going to have minyanim. So it is complex. It is complex. We're talking about making a responsible weighing of the factors, right? Taking into account everything. Going about it in a responsible way. Again, with the understanding that I'm doing what Hashem expects me to do, to put the information as best as I can to make a responsible, disciplined decision without an edge of desperation while my emotional energy stays placed on Hashem. Question, yes.
I would just add one more piece in the aftermath that sometimes in second-guessing ourselves, if something doesn't come out the way we would want it to come out, that we have to remember that Hashem doesn't always open our eyes. And maybe after the fact, we would say, oi, I didn't hear about such and such a doctor, or if I had only thought about that piece that I didn't think about, but Hashem didn't want us to see.
That's a very, very chashuva point. Yashar koach for raising that, because that actually is a very fundamental piece of this discussion also, the after the fact issue. After the fact issue of suddenly realizing, let's say you made a decision. Forget about discovering new information. You were very, very torn between two possibilities. You made a disciplined, responsible decision, and it didn't work out well. And now a person starts saying, well, so it turns out it was a mistake. I should have done the other thing. This is definitely where bitachon kicks in a very big way. You knew that you did yours. Now you say, if so, then I know for a fact that this is what Hashem wanted for me. In fact, I just read this Friday. Chazon Ish was a very, very calm, collected person, serene person. Reb Chaim Kanievsky said that there was one thing that they saw consistently. Nothing got him angry or excited, except one thing. When people would say, well, if we would have. That angered him. That angered the Chazon Ish. There's no if we would have. Again, if a person was irresponsible, then you have to face that. Even there, facing the fact that you were irresponsible does not mean moving back in time. It means I acknowledge I made a mistake here. Had I not made the mistake, maybe things would have been different. But now they're not different, right? What am I supposed to do going forward? But that's a different sugi from bitachon. It's not bitachon. That's an issue of learning from your mistakes and being able to move on. Bitachon means that when you did not make a wrong, you didn't use wrong shikul hadas, right? You didn't use wrong discretion. You used right discretion, and the results were not what we would think of as the positive results. That is where bitachon is epitomized. There was a maisa with Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, where he had a. This is how the story goes. I like to preface these stories by saying a quote that I heard from an Ish Chacham, that he said, all the stories I tell are true. I'm not sure if they actually happened or not, but they are true. Because as far as we're concerned, the point of the story is its point. If the point is true, the point is true. So here I'm saying, I don't know if this story happened or not, but this is the story. It's a true story. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld once dreamt about the winning number of a lottery. He dreamt about the winning number. He woke up the next morning and wasn't sure if he should spend, I don't know, talk in our terms, the dollar on the lottery ticket based on his dream. And he decided that no, a dream about a winning lottery ticket number does not warrant spending a dollar. And that number won. And when he heard about it, they came and they told it to him. He was completely unfazed. He was like, so what? I made the right decision. The dream did not warrant spending a dollar. In fact, that one had nothing to do with it. This is what we're talking about. Now, that's definitely easier said than done. I think I would have a harder time with that. I don't think I would dream the winning number in the first place. But this is the point. This is the point. The ability to say, Hashem, I want to be where Hashem wants me to be. I get there by taking the steps that Hashem wants me to take. If I took those steps, then I'm exactly where Hashem wants me to be. So this is prerequisite number two. That when we have that bitachon, it's exclusive. We don't place our bitachon on anything else. And an important piece to add here is also not on our own talents. This is tough because a lot of times we feel like there are things that we have under control. And here's the challenge to be able to remain. This is what I think of as the other side of the coin of bitachon. Bitachon, we always think of bitachon as relevant when I'm facing a doubt, when I'm facing uncertainty, when I don't know what's going to be, I'm nervous, I'm apprehensive, then bitachon kicks in. But you know what? Bitachon is one of those avodas that you're supposed to be busy with all the time. It's a lifetime career. So what does a person who has a very secure, straight, smooth life, what does he do about bitachon? This is also where bitachon comes in. It's the other side of the coin of bitachon. Bitachon, when everything is going fine, can actually sometimes be more challenging. It's the understanding that, why am I fine? Because I'm in Hashem's hands. So here we come back to this point. When we say, don't put your bitachon on anything else, that means if you have a job that you're good at and it's been providing you amply with your needs for the last 17 years. So the challenge here is to feel like when it comes, where's my panasa coming from next month? What do you mean, where's it coming from? I have it under control. It's coming from Hashem. And my bitachon is not in the fact that I have this skill. Later, we're going to see the Chavos HaLavos tells a story of an accomplished scribe. I imagine he's not talking about a Sefer Stam. In earlier times, not everybody wrote. Right? Not everybody was literate. Scribes were people who was a very, very relevant and common profession that people needed. You needed to have something written up. You went to a scribe. So there was a very accomplished scribe, a very professional scribe. And somebody once asked, "Oh, how's Parnassa going?" And he said, "Well, I have my hand, so Parnassa is fine." The Chavos HaLavos tells that later that day, he lost his hand. So the point being that, yeah, you have things under control because you have the abilities, etc. So here it's the same point. Your bitachon has to be on Hashem. This is something that is very relevant for us to work on a regular basis. We don't have to wait for when we're facing particular situations. The bitachon has to be on Hashem. My faith is not in the fact that I know how to get the job done, that I have the skill, that I have the ability. Not in my employer also. I have a beautiful working relationship with him for the last 20 years. There's no reason why anything should change. That's not where my parnasa comes from. My parnasa comes from Hashem. And I'm grateful for the fact that right now my hand is serving as a conduit for that parnasa. This employer, I have to treat him with respect and with hakaras hatov, because Hashem chose him to be his conduit toward me. But it could be coming from anywhere else also, whether my own abilities, whether somebody else, to whatever means Hashem decides to provide.
What about the idea that Hashem recreates the world every second? In my mind, like, that's like really key, because you can't rely on this table being there in 5 minutes from now unless Hashem decides it's going to be there, right? I mean, like, everything, it's just minute by minute. Like, we take a lot of things for granted, that if you really believe that it's all being recreated every second, you wouldn't be taking it for granted.
So you're bringing in a chash of a point, a deep point, that's really discussed more by later authorities, the concept of Chadesh, Petuvah, V'chari, and Tomim, Ma'aseh B'Bereishis, that Hashem is actually recreating everything constantly. When you look at an inanimate object in front of you, you're seeing Hashem at work. From 1 second to the next, He is, don't look at an inanimate object, look at an animate object, look at your hand, and look at yourself in the mirror, and you're seeing what Hashem is doing. He's busy creating. And that definitely is a very, very, Take, you're right. It's a chash of a point in terms of what we're talking about. It's the understanding that I am now because Hashem is maintaining me. And health, parnasa, etc. If I expect that it's going to be that way tomorrow, it's because of the fact that Hashem showed me that He's been doing it for me up till now. Not because, well, why shouldn't it be? Okay, we move on to the fourth prerequisite, right? Number one, a chronic recapper. Number one is reviewing, internalizing the 7 points, which this time I'm not going to review. Number two is focusing on the fact that Hashem is looking to see, are you relying on me or not? Number three is shifting all of your sense of security onto Hashem and not onto anything else. Anything else you simply see as Hashem's means, Hashem's conduit, which could have been anything else also. Hashem doesn't need a particular means. So therefore, whether it's a doctor, whether it's an employer, whether it's an ability, a talent that you have, etc., that's not, I never make the mistake of identifying that as my source of salvation, as my source of well-being, but rather, it all stays on Hashem. Now, number four. V'agdomar aviz, sheteash gachasoy chazok, v'shtadlus ha'gder, that you have to put in very great efforts, and be very conscientious about, v'kayim ha'shechivoy boy ha'boyoy me'avaydosu, to live up to what Hashem expects of you in terms of serving Him, to do the things He wants you to do, and to avoid what He doesn't want you to do. Just as you say, Hashem, well, I'm putting my panasa and my health and everything else about me into your hands, and I want you to do it optimally. Hashem says, well, there are things that I want you to do optimally also. Like Chazal said, you make his will your will, so that he'll make your will his will. If you want your interests and your well-being to be the will of Hashem, so then you have to make Hashem's desires yours. Batel ritzoincho mitnei ritzoinoi, kedei sheivato ritzoin achemim mitnei ritzoincho. You negate your desires before his, let his prevail, so that he will negate others' desires before you. If people want to harm you, Hashem says, no, this is my person. So I want to note here that this seems to conflict with the point that we made earlier, but let's see a little bit more. I'm skipping to a couple of lines. However, if a person relies on Hashem, Hashem is going to do everything for me in the best way possible. While at the same time, I'm busy defying Hashem and spiting him. How foolish is that? And how unintelligent is that? So, what are we saying here? If you want to really rest assured that Hashem is going to be caring for you optimally, you have to make sure that you're in good standing with Him. Otherwise, why should He? Now, if you remember, the last of the 7 points that we said earlier was that Hashem will do chesed for you unconditionally, even if you're not deserving. How do we put that together with this? So, there's a very hush of a point here, which it seems clear to me that this is really the intent of the Chavis HaLevavos. And that is that there are two layers here. When he talks about that Hashem will do chesed for you if you're undeserving, he's actually coming to preclude. He's not coming to say you can do whatever you want and he'll just continue to take care of you. It's not what he's saying. He's saying something else. He's saying that you don't have to, a person can start getting into a situation where, oh wow, I learned Shara B'chinam. I'm really internalizing it. Now I understand that there's so much that Hashem is doing for me on a regular basis. It's the digestive system. There's the respiratory system, right? There's the immune system. There's all these different systems, right? And all these different organs, and they all have to be working properly. And I said, so 1 minute. So what am I doing to justify the respiratory system? And what am I doing to justify my legs? What am I doing to justify my arms and my sight and my smelling and my taste? And a person starts going nuts, and he's trying to keep track of, well, Shachris is going to be for my respiratory system, and Mincha for my immune system, and everything else. And there are three things that are not covered on the list. I better invite 3 more guests for Shabbos. So a person could be thinking of it in those terms because Hashem is busy doing for me and he wants things from me. Am I justifying them? That the Chavis HaLevavos says, forget about that. But that doesn't mean forget about everything. Here the Chavis HaLevavos is saying what Hashem does want is live the way I want you to be living. You don't have to worry about covering all my chesed. You know what? You can't anyways. You can't anyways. I will do for you much more than you deserve. But you live up to my expectations of you. I don't expect you to live up to everything I'm doing for you. I don't expect you to earn everything I'm doing for you. There's no way that you can. But what I do expect of you, do conscientiously. In other words, you be doing your best. That, and therefore we have to rectify. We shouldn't say that Hashem will do the best for you unconditionally. That's not exactly so. There is a condition. The condition is that you should be doing your best. Hashem will continue to care for you even if you're not, but that care might look different. If a person, Chalila, right? I think we discussed this the other week. If a person, Chalila, is sinning and Hashem says this person needs a wake-up call, so Hashem sends him a blow. Say, breaks a leg. Instead of saying, why did Hashem do this to me? The person says, well, Hashem is always doing the best for me, so this is fine. And he just continues with his dubious lifestyle, and he breaks another leg. Okay, this is also great. He's mekabel ba'ava, and he moves on, breaks an arm. Right? He never gives it, it's never stops short to say, maybe there's something I'm doing wrong, because who cares if I'm doing anything wrong? Hashem is always doing the best for me anyways. No. Hashem is doing the best for you. What's the best? You should break a leg in order to start thinking into what are things that require change. Maybe that's why this person needed a broken leg. So we want to be, not just that Hashem is doing what's best for us, but what Hashem is doing what the best possible best for us, meaning I'm living, doing my utmost to live up to what he wants for me, and then I can trust that he is doing his plan A for me, right? The most optimal best for me. But if you're not doing that, if you're not living up to what he wants, then again, you can term it in two ways. You can either say then, no, he's not necessarily going to be caring for you in the best way, or you could say it a little differently, which is probably more accurate. The best way will mean something else. It'll have to be a more compromised best. It'll have to be a kind of best that is meant to try to wake you up and get you back onto the desired track. We don't want that best.
But this is terms in rebellion. Like, you could have a chance to do an extra mitzvah, have more gas. Like you're complying, but maybe you're not going the extra mile. But this is about if you're actually rebelling and dafka, not doing what you're supposed to. That's at least the language that it's translated.
Right.
Those are two different things in my mind.
Right. So the way I've been portraying it is Hashem wants you to be doing your best. You're right. The Chavos Havavos terms it a little differently. The Chavos Havavos, you know what? You have to look at all of his Lashonis. He talks about not spiting Hashem. If you're spiting Hashem and expecting him to take care of you, then you're a little bit on conflicting tracks. But look back at the beginning. You know what? I want to put this on hold and pick up from here next week, because I don't want to start something without finishing it. This is the type of thing that if you start it, yeah, and leave it hanging, it might give the wrong impression. But this is a very hush of a discussion. The understanding that you can't just do whatever you please and expect that you'll continue to get everything in the best way possible. What does Hashem want from you? So, in a basic way, we're saying now, Hashem wants you to be trying. Hashem wants you to be conscientiously living in the way that he wants you to live. But as was just raised here, this deserves some more elaboration. There's also another couple of points I want to address relevant to what we've been seeing, including a question that was sent to me this week. Bli neder next week. Okay. Let's stop here. Ruchim to you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Ruchim to you. Ruchim to you.
Thank you very much.
Ruchim to you.